offer members who have logged in, and I will just be joining you shortly, as I was just confirming speaking to Honorable Sokacha, who is not able to join us. He's still not well, and therefore we will respect that. But in the next few minutes, we start.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, colleagues.
Good afternoon, Sheikh. How are you?
Good.
Good afternoon, all of you.
Good afternoon, Matemba.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Yeah, Vajay, Puti. They've locked up too.
Good afternoon, Mr. Joe Hatler. Have you logged in with the other members of the TEPA? Oh, I see there's a TG Anpan Play. Who else has logged in from the department? Oh yes, I see Mr. Ian van der Merwe, and was immediately we open up, we'll go to them. Is Dr. Andrews logged in?
Not yet, Chair. Good afternoon. I'll just check with her quickly, Chair.
Please do. We'll need to be starting, and from your briefing. Last night you told me that she leads the presentation unless there's two changes. Otherwise, we don't have much on the opening. I need just to start with her. As soon as she's in, you indicate. And then I see Dr. Tular. Is there any other, who's leading the delegation? DDG Anpan Play.
Afternoon, Chair. No, I think the DG is going to join us, so I will probably wait for him.
I see Dr. Andrews is logged in. That's fine, but then we'll be opening. My watch is saying we have 4 minutes to start, isn't it? Unless my watch is it 26 minutes after one, is that so?
No, it's 32 minutes past one.
I must go and get my watch. Yes. Okay. That means I'm behind. Okay. Right. Good afternoon, honorable members, and good afternoon to the Department of Health. I am told that the minister is unable to join us because of the junta, cabinet, the junta. We'll hear from the delegation that is here if DG is joining us. I was also alerted that he may not be joining us because of the same program of the junta. Good afternoon also to our parliamentary staff supporting us in this program, to our secretary, Ms. Machalamba, and all other IT leaders who have joined in to make us possible to be in this meeting. We have one item on the agenda, and I'm glad to announce that the members have read the report, and if they haven't, they will not be able to blame anyone, but the report was forwarded to us as yesterday. We are going to be listening to you, Department, because you set yourself targets. We were not there when you set those targets. And we are happy that there are certain targets that you were able to reach. And maybe you don't spend too much time on that. Of course, we have to congratulate you and commend you for work well done. There are certain concerns with the targets that you set for yourself that you didn't achieve. And that is where probably you need to actually appraise us. Even though we see the report and so there are reasons given why you were not able to achieve this, that, and the other. However, it's still incumbent upon you to say you did not achieve this, what is the plan? And we will then take it from there. If I may request honorable members that we allow them to go through back to back with the presenters, and we note our questions that we'd like to, and my gadget now is working, so I'll be noting honorable members both on the IT from Parliament and also on my WhatsApp as to who would like to engage with the reports. If then that is now acceptable, may I give an opportunity to Ms. Machalamba to officially indicate those members of us who have indicated their unavailability because of other reasons. Ms. Machalamba.
Good afternoon and thank you, Chair. I've received an apology from Dr. Jacobs. He won't be able to attend due to prior commitments. And also from Ms. Wilson. She won't be able to attend because her aunt has passed on. Thank you, Chair.
Our condolence. I don't know whether it has come through to our system. I might have missed it because I had a challenge with my phone until just 10 minutes ago. If maybe we could also note the apology that I was just confirming yesterday. Honorable Sokata was not able to join us because of ill health. He's still not able to join us today. So we note those three apologies. Maybe if we could remember our honorable member, Honorable Wilson, in the bereavement of the family by observing a moment of silence, I will greatly appreciate that from all of us, honorable members. If we can do that now, thank you. May the soul of the departed relative of Honorable Wilson rest in eternal peace. Amen. Now we can move, honorable members, to the business of the day. Whoever is mandated to lead and open up from the department will do that and indicate their line of presentation. Can I request once more, honorable members, let's allow them to flow right through to the end of their presentation, and then we'll note and take our comments and questions thereafter. Now back to you, Dr. Anpan Play.
Chair, I think it's good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. I think it's Dr. Andrews who will be doing the presentation.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, colleagues. I'm sorry, I was struggling to log on, so hence my video is not on. I have some connectivity challenges sometimes, but I'm not sure if the if introductions were done already. But I'm Gail Andrews, the Chief Operating Officer in the National Department of Health. And I have with me my colleagues, and we have also invited some of the chief directors, since it's virtual, to have the experience of engaging with the portfolio committee, both by way of capacity building, but also learning how to answer questions, et cetera, in Parliament, and to also assist with that. So I just like all the DDGs to introduce themselves, and then we can start with the presentation. If Dr. Ian van der Merwe can be given hosting rights, he will be loading the presentation and scrolling through it. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Yeah, let's allow the members to introduce themselves. I hope you'll also allow me to take a lead from Dr. Anban Pillay and take off my jacket, and I'm going to do that now.
Apologies, Honorable Chair, but I'm not sure if the departmental DDGs introduced themselves already, and if so, then I will proceed with the presentation.
I was going to request that we come to know who they are. It's very important, and thanks for your leadership to invite a significant number of all of them to be here with us, just to know their names and who they are, chief directors and DDGs. Yes, thanks.
So, colleagues, can we first start maybe with the DDGs, and then the chief directors can introduce themselves. I suggest we start. Dr. Anban Pillay has introduced himself, but maybe Dr. Pillay, if you have any chief directors you want to also hand over to them to introduce themselves.
Just while the colleagues are introducing themselves, show us your TV screen, then we can see you. Then you can switch off both your mute. You can mute and then also close your video after we have done the introduction. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, Honourable Members. No, I don't have any chief directors with me today. I'm the DDG for NHI, the National Department of Health. Thank you.
Rennie.
There's Ms. Tulare here, there's Dr. Tulare here. Please, can you follow one after the other?
Afternoon, Chair, and afternoon, Honorable Members. My name is Annelies Wacele, the Acting DDG Primary Healthcare and Hospital Systems. With me, I've been joined by the Chief Director, Mr. Christie, who is responsible for infrastructure. Thanks, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Valerie Rennie. I'm Head of Corporate Services, National Health. Still struggling with my video. Don't know what is the problem. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Ian van der Merwe. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the National Department of Health.
Good afternoon, Chair. I can't operate my video. It's Dr. Tulare. I'm the Technical Specialist for Health Economics, National Health Insurance in the Department of Health. Thanks. My apologies. My gadget does not allow me to use the camera. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. And then I'm here with Ms. Tuli Zondi will introduce herself, as well as Ms. Mashwana and Mr. Victor Kanile, who's the acting chief director for in the health workforce cluster. We also have Dr. Makanya as acting DDG for program. Sriyo must introduce herself. Over to you, Tulile.
Good afternoon, Chair and the honorable members. I'm Tulile Zondi, responsible for health information research, M&E. Thank you.
Good afternoon, honorable chairperson, honorable members. My name is Victor Kanyile. I'm currently acting as the chief director in the human resource for health. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. My name is Misoti Mshwana. I'm responsible for public entities governance at the Department of Health. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mshwana. We're told there's Dr. Makanya also. Okay, if you are done, Dr. Andrews, you can then continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe before I start the presentation, if I can just ask Ms. Rennie to try and check with Dr. Makanya. Who's going to represent Program 3 if she's maybe not able to make it? Because my understanding was that she would be here. Maybe she's struggling because she struggles with connectivity sometimes. So, honorable members, we're presenting today our performance of the National Department of Health, quarters 1 to quarter 4. And our final performance as per our annual report. Next slide, please, Ian.
I'm not getting it to move. Is it moving on your side?
It's not moving.
It may be stuck, Ian. You may have to...
All right, let me stop sharing and share again. Is it there now?
You can just go to slideshow again.
Yes, it's on now.
All right, let me just put it on slideshow. Is it okay now?
Yes, move now to the first slide.
Oh, here we go, okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ian. Honorable members, our report is actually presented in line with the budget programs, program 1, which is administration, program 2, national health insurance, program 3, communicable and non-communicable diseases, program 4 is primary health care, and program 5, hospital systems, and program 6 is health system governance and human resources for health, a budget program. Next slide, thank you. Now, what I would like to do is to, where we have had achievements, to just highlight that we have had our target for an unqualified audit opinion achieved. And then I would, for where we didn't achieve our targets, I would attempt to point out the reasons for the deviation. So with the next one, in terms of our provincial departments that had to demonstrate improvements in audit outcomes, our target was to have 5 provincial departments achieve improvements, but we only had 2. The Eastern Cape and Mpumalanga qualified on contingent liabilities. The Eastern Cape and Free State did not manage to maintain the status quo, which was achieved in previous years. Free State was basically qualified on goods and services. The auditor was unable to confirm that goods and services had actually been received and accounted for. And that was the reason why no improvement was shown there. Then also had not managed to achieve our target of implementing a claim management system to manage the medical legal claims in all provincial departments of health. We only managed to do it in 3 of the 9 provinces by the end of the financial year, which means 6 provinces didn't implement. And this was really due to delayed capturing of claims data and data cleaning in some provinces. Next slide, Ian. We then go to the budget program on national health insurance. Here, we had aimed to have our proclamation of the NHI Act by the end of the financial year. Unfortunately, parliamentary processes on the NHI bill was delayed by COVID pandemic, and so this process is ongoing. Then our next target, we achieved the target, but the target was focusing on not on training of district health teams to implement NHI, because the NHC had decided that we focus on building the capacity of the executive authorities and the key managers, senior managers, and these were then, and some of the officials that were selected to accompany them. And the focus was on study tours to Thailand, subsequently also to the UK. So we did do training, targeted training, but not of the district teams as we had envisaged. Next slide, please. Now, this program focuses on the previous slide, please, Ian. Okay, no, that's right. Universal achievement of universal health coverage. I think Ian skipped this. The compare year, the aim is on implementation of NHI through a comprehensive package of district services being designed. The comprehensive package for district health services was finalized for hospitals, district health hospitals, and as well as for primary health care facilities. So target was well achieved. And then the other target on number of district health contracting teams trained for accelerated implementation of NHI. Here we had some challenges. Like I said, we first trained the executives and then we trained the other teams. Next slide, Ian. Our next program is to eliminate the strategic objective of the which we had in our strategic plan was to completely eliminate stockouts of essential medicines, which we all know was a big problem for quite a while. Here, we actually exceeded our target, and all the facilities that were expected to report, we had a target of 3290. And our achieved target was 3,300 facilities who were actually reporting availability of stock at our central national surveillance center. Then the early warning system, we also achieved that target. So we have an early warning system for implemented in partnership with users of the services. The system aims at eliminating the medicine stockouts Next one, please, Ian. The number of facilities with automated e-prescription and e-dispensing systems, we anticipated 25 as our target, and we've achieved that. And then we also implemented our electronic medicine catalog as planned. Next one. We also plan to enroll patients, increase the number of patients enrolled into our CCMDD program. Here we really did very well and exceeded the target in an exceptional way by more than 300,000 people reached. And the program is actually very popular with patients. And that's a positive thing. And then we also plan to implement a surveillance system to monitor antimicrobial resistance. This was also achieved in six provincial departments of health as planned. Then we also had to develop and implement a system for a NHI beneficiary registry through the development of a HPRS system. Unfortunately, here we had major challenges with the procurement of hardware required for implementation, with extensive delays in Mpumalanga with a vendor, which then delayed implementation in hospitals by 9 months. So that was the challenge we faced in not achieving our target. However, with regards to the beneficiary registry, we wanted to have 40 million people registered on our NHI beneficiary registry, and this target was exceeded. This was actually obviously facilitated by assistance from SASSA, where we could import from their database. The next program is communicable diseases and non-communicable diseases. The first target was aimed at finding more new TB cases in our population, and we actually managed to achieve that target, actually exceeding it by more than 3,000 people. We, however, had a challenge with the male circumcisions, where we didn't achieve our target because one of the key PEPFAR partners supporting the Department of Health in the key districts, their contract was terminated by PEPFAR, and this impacted on the number of circumcisions we could conduct. The partner was a university research company. Then we had a target for the number of, against the indicator for HIV testing and national health screening and testing campaign. So we wanted to increase the number of people we're seeing through we're screening through our testing campaign. And year two, the target was exceeded, which is quite commendable, was exceeded by more than 4 million. So the campaign was very successful. In terms of reducing under 5 mortality rate, which is remains a key strategic objective even in the next 5 years, we had planned to conduct a survey on expanded program on immunization. The survey was, data collection was done, but unfortunately, the end goal was to have the survey report published, and this was unfortunately not achieved due to delays in fieldwork and data fieldwork on data collection, and it resulted in us then only having a draft report, preliminary report, which we could present to a high-level committee. We still proceeded to identify interventions to guide the program on where to focus, but we still await the full report. The next One was to achieve, to have 6 provincial trainings conducted so that the provinces themselves are able to implement the recommendations of the EPI surveillance and coverage external review team. And this was achieved and with all 9 provinces. Then we wanted to develop quality improvement plans, especially for regional hospitals, with a view to improving the care for pregnant women and neonates. And this was well achieved. Next slide, Ian. In terms of malaria, we achieved the target and continue to focus on the main 3 main provinces in elimination, to achieve our goal of elimination of malaria in the country. Then the next our next target was to was set against the indicator of having a national action plan implemented so as to give effect to the recommendations of the joint external evaluation committee and ensure that we are implementing our international health regulations. Our target was to have 50% of the recommendations activities implemented, and that was also very well achieved through good collaboration with our partners. Now we move to another program, communicable and non-communicable diseases, where we continue now with expanding access to mental health services through the strategic purchases of services from the private health sector, through bringing in private healthcare providers. Unfortunately, we did not manage to achieve this target, mainly because the contract with the service provider was cancelled, hence there's 0 performance here. However, the money that was set aside in this indirect grant was then used for improving mental health services in the Eastern Cape and KZN, where there was a need, a great need, and where people were contracted to provide services to mental health patients, both care, treatment, and rehab services. We also did not manage to achieve our goal or our strategic our indicator we set of having 250 forensic mental health observations conducted every quarter, and it is for the same reason that the contract was cancelled with the service provider before the program started. And then in terms of strengthening district mental health services, it is the same challenge we face, because we did not, the award was not made to the service provider, contract was cancelled. We had to continue to just encourage and rely on provinces to use their own available resources, and many of them cited scarcity of financial resources as a challenge. We failed to achieve our target in terms of expanding rehab services to people with physical disabilities through the training and employment of multidisciplinary rehab teams. As outlined there, especially physios, audiologists, occupational therapists, speech therapists. No, my apologies. We in fact managed to achieve that target. Five districts managed to have these rehab teams in place. So let us claim our achievement there. With regards to radiation oncology, we also did very well in that we aimed to have 7,000 patients receiving oncology, radiation oncology, and we actually exceeded the target in that 9,149 patients were actually receiving radiation oncology, largely through very good cooperation from specialists in the private sector and larger uptake than we'd anticipated. Then we also had a strategic objective to improve access to community-based primary health care services through training of community health workers in revised scope of work, where we well exceeded the target and fell short, however, on the target of related to the indicator number of clients traced by community health workers. Unfortunately, the data that was reported only reflected HIV and TB clients, and there was no data reflected for patients presenting for antenatal care, immunization, diabetes, as well as patients with hypertension. So because these lists were not generated and given to the community health workers, they were unable to trace them, and we need to strengthen this area of this important area of work, given our NCD burden. In terms of the mobile application for community health workers being piloted, this also didn't take off as anticipated due to the PEPFAR funding cycle, which started late, they were dependent on this for assisting with the application to register households receiving care. We were a bit too dependent on PEPFAR. Next slide, please. This is the program primary health care. One of the key objectives for this program was to strengthen district governance and improve management and leadership of the district health system. And we looked to actually improving the number of districts or increasing the number of districts supported to be compliant with the minimum requirements for district health management office structures. The guideline for these structures through the development of implementation plans. And we managed to develop implementation plans for 30 districts as per our target. When it came to reviewing the functions of the National Health Act, in order to better define the functions of the District Health Management Office, we fell short of achieving our target there, largely because this is very closely linked to the implementation of NHI and the NHI bill. So the National Health Amendment Bill could not be drafted to incorporate the functions of the District Health Management Offices, and because it was then envisaged that it would be better achieved if it moves along with the amendment of the NHI bill once it's enacted. Next slide, please. Here we had to train 970 primary healthcare committees. Unfortunately, we also fell short of achieving this target. And the main reason is that this was the first year we as a department started to train primary health care facility committees, and unfortunately had under-budgeted for this function. With regards to the number of district hospital boards trained, we exceeded our target and trained 118 district hospital boards to implement the handbook for governance structures. In terms of the clinics which reached ideal clinic status in the country, we exceeded our target and managed to have 1,906 clinics actually achieving ideal clinic status, which was very good. In terms of the facilities being accessible to people with disabilities, we did very well also, but fell short by 4% of reaching our target of 45, and that was mainly due to operational reasons where some clinics had to be closed for renovation or either permanently closed due to infrastructure challenges that they were experiencing, and then also later due to the COVID outbreak. Thanks, Ian. Next slide. We overachieved the year as well, although not by much, but we did manage to have 257 district hospitals conduct baseline self-assessments on how to use the ideal hospital framework with a view to also improving the quality of services in hospitals. With regards to the traditional health practitioners bill, yeah, we didn't make the progress we had anticipated because we would have wanted the traditional practitioners amendment bill to actually be submitted to Parliament and go through the parliamentary processes by the end of the financial year. However, there were some challenges during the consultation process, and this led to us now seeking a legal opinion, and the bill was sent to the state law advisor for a preliminary opinion before we can proceed with this bill. In terms of implementing the National Patient Guideline, the National Guideline on Conducting the Patient Experience of Care. Unfortunately, this was not achieved, this target, because they revised the guidelines and it didn't make it to the TechNHC in time. So provinces could not implement the guideline as was anticipated when the guideline was approved. In terms of the number of chronic patients providing feedback on the quality of care through an electronic platform, we had a target of 1 million, but we only had 4,559 patients actually providing feedback through the electronic platform due to challenges with the patient satisfaction assessment app, which was not fully implemented due to the fact that we got stuck with the proof of concept phase, which was only implemented in 398 facilities. Our next strategic objective relates to improving environmental health in all our districts, and we intended to have our environmental health legislation reviewed, specifically the target being amendment of certain acts, certain sections of the National Health Act and the Environmental Health Bill to be drafted. This process, however, was also delayed and had to be put on hold due to the team focusing on preparedness for COVID-19 during the fourth quarter. In terms of our points of entry, being compliant with the international health regulations, the core capacity requirements, we assessed our ports of entry, and actually we fell short of two ports being assessed.
This was largely due to the fact that COVID came and we only had one airport that we could not assess, and then further on, personnel were also redirected to responding to the outbreak. So the action plan could not be implemented as planned, and therefore another port was not assessed as planned. Then we moved to auditing of our facilities. We achieved the target where we, in fact, exceeded the target where we had to have 78 health facilities audited and an annual report produced in terms of their adherence to the healthcare risk waste norms and standards. The actual achievement was 85 facilities, which was really good against the target of 78 public health facilities audited. When we come to the next one, however, we had anticipated that 31 municipalities would have been selected and audited against the norms and standards for environmental health. But unfortunately, we did not achieve our target. And because one municipality was not audited, however, it's reassuring to know that this municipality had been audited in the previous year. Next slide, Ian. This focuses in terms of ensuring efficient, our strategic objective was to ensure efficient and effective delivery of quality emergency medical services. We had a couple of indicators here, and both of these indicators, the targets set against these performance indicators were achieved, whereby we submitted the national report to the DG and disseminated it to provincial heads of departments together with the revised plans to improve EMS in the provinces as planned. And then with the ideal emergency services framework, the framework was developed and also circulated to TEC in preparation for the meeting of TEC NHC. In terms of hospital systems, honorable members, we have had a couple of challenges. One of them being that we were without a director for hospital services also during the period. Our hospital director was moved to another post in one of the provinces. So what we had anticipated was to have a number of regional and tertiary hospitals assessed using the ideal hospital framework, but we did not achieve our target of 44. Instead, we only had 37 regional hospitals and 12 tertiary hospitals assessed instead of 17 tertiary hospitals. The reason for this is really that there was a challenge with getting approval for the tool in some of the hospitals, and hence some hospitals did not implement it during the year under review. In terms of the next objective, which is improving quality of existing health infrastructure in South Africa, yeah, we've also had a number of challenges with our infrastructure targets. Our quarter four cumulative target was actually to have 37 facilities compliant with infrastructure norms and standards, and this was achieved. Apologies, and it was found that in the assessment, 37 facilities were compliant with the norms and standards on infrastructure. In terms of the clinics, constructed or revitalized. Here, there was a challenge, and 19 clinics and community health centers were not constructed or revitalized, mainly because of challenges with the service provider, which prevented us from completing the projects as planned. There was also a delay in procurement of medical equipment. Then we had another planned target of 37 facilities being compliant with the infrastructure norms and standards. Ian, I think this is a duplication of the previous slide, so we can move on. Thank you. Facilities, our target was to have 45 facilities maintained, repaired, or refurbished. Unfortunately, here, six of our projects failed to reach the practical completion stage, as was projected. However, it should be noted by the honorable members that some of the projects were already at 98% completion, but was then badly affected by the lockdown. In terms of the next indicator, was aimed at having 36 hospitals revitalized. Again, here we only managed to have 20 hospitals revitalized, falling short by 16 hospitals for the similar reason as mentioned in the previous, with the previous targets. Next one, yeah. Sorry, Ian, let me just see the last one. The number of facilities maintained, repaired, or refurbished through the equitable share and HFRG grant in the districts, here the target set was achieved, which is 100 facilities which were maintained, repaired, and or refurbished. Thank you. Honorable members, this takes us now to the last program, which is program 6. In this program, which comprises governance over entities, health information research, monitoring and evaluation, and information systems, as well as integrated policy and planning, and then also some work, some of the work related to hospitals, specifically the part of forensic laboratories, which was also brought over to the COO portfolio. So yes, there will be quite a mix of indicators in this program, in this budget program. NAPISA was planned to be established and listed as a public entity and the board appointed. However, as honorable members will be aware, the NAPISA bill lapsed in the National Assembly on the 7th of May and in 2019, and it was only revived again on the 26th November in the National Assembly. So the target was not achieved for the by the end of the financial year. In terms of the next indicator, we wanted to, as usual, review our entities and statutory councils reporting to us and draft reports, and this was delivered as planned in order to strengthen corporate governance. Another target we had here was to have a handbook implemented which could guide all those departmental reps serving on entities or statutory councils so that they know what's expected of them and how to report back to the minister. However, there were some delays in reviewing the handbook because it was then felt that the handbook of the department must become more aligned to the training material produced for entities on corporate governance and board effectiveness in line with the King Code. So that was not achieved. However, we achieved our target on publishing the EL strategy, as well as conducting the NHI evaluation, end evaluation of the entire phase one for NHI. And some honorable members might remember we have circulated this report and presented it to Parliament, to the Portfolio Committee before. So the lessons learned from here has now been taken forward into the planning by the NHI team going forward. Next slide, please, Ian. Our Human Resource for Health Strategy 2020 to 2030 was drafted and it was finalized by the end of March. It was actually served at TEC and approved for onward movement to the National Health Council. Unfortunately, the last NHC, the agenda was completely re-diverted to focus only on COVID, so we could not get approval and therefore our strategy was not published. However, we have provinces have been given the draft strategy to work with, and we at National have also moved on to implement many of the recommendations in the strategy. In terms of the next one, a normative guide on the number of facilities with revised organograms as per the normative guides, as per WISEN. Unfortunately, this was not achieved or finalized because most all the provincial departments were struggling to follow up with the DPSA process in terms of determining their staffing structures, which then delayed the whole process of alignment to the WISEN norms and standards. Then we also plan to develop regulations for HR, Human Resource for Health Regulations, as outlined in Section 52 of the Health Act. We had drafted the regulations as planned, and it is now to be taken forward. So that was achieved. Then we had a plan to actually review our policy for community service, mainly because we have had many challenges with absorption of community health service graduates. The graduates who some categories of professions, it was difficult to absorb them into community service. And we plan to review the policy, however, struggle to find the finances really to implement the terms of reference and contract a service provider to do a thorough review, because we felt it's also quite a very hot and sensitive topic. Because many graduates expect to do community service as they see it as a form of employment also, and plus it's also a statutory obligation currently. So we thought a rigorous review would be required. Unfortunately, then came COVID and we had to redivert our monies that we had managed to raise for this towards contributing towards the COVID fund. In terms of developing a user manual with standardized PASEL definitions aimed at improving the use of PASEL and its many functionalities, unfortunately, we did not achieve this target, honorable members, and however, decided to focus on cleaning up our PASEL data to ensure accuracy of our data, and this is work which will now be worked on vigorously over the next year as we continue to build our human resource information system in line with the Health Workforce Accounts 10 modules as per WHO's 10 modules. So work is continuing to strengthen the information systems. With regards to placement of the Nelson Mandela Fidel Castro students who trained in Cuba and then placing them into their final year of training at South African universities, we fell short of our target by 3 because these 3 students did not actually pass their 5th year and remained in Cuba. They didn't pass their 5th year of study. Then our next target was to have 100% of South African medical interns and COMSERV personnel who studied at our universities in South Africa allocated for placement, and we achieved that with 100% within time frame and target. We also plan to have all 10 our nursing colleges commencing with the new nursing programs that has been developed in the 2020 academic year. Unfortunately, we only had 6 colleges which could commence because we had challenges with Council on Higher Education in accrediting some of these colleges to commence with the new nursing programs. So we continue to work with them so that they can be accredited and start implementing the program soonest. Then we had to have a draft nursing strategy also approved. The strategy was also approved in the last meeting of Tech in the last meeting held now of NHC. However, it was not achieved by the end of the financial year because, as with the HRH strategy, effort was refocused for all the MECs and NHC to focus on planning for COVID. Now we move to the forensic laboratories. In terms of percentage backlog for blood alcohol eliminated, we've achieved our target 100% and had problems, however, with the toxicology tests because of a number of challenges. Mainly, we had to prioritize urgent requests that come to us from the justice system. There was also equipment breakdowns and delays in repairs of equipment. Some staff also stopped working because they didn't get their hepatitis B vaccinations in time, and there was some little bit of labor action there. And the vacant post for the head of toxicology in the Joburg lab no doubt contributed to this unachievement. Now, just in summary, honorable members, as you can see, I've outlined the achievements and challenges where we have not achieved in terms of our annual performance plan, in our annual performance plan of 2019-2020. The report as it stands here has been audited by the AG, but is still being finalized. However, we only managed to achieve 32 out of our 71 targets, which is 45% achievement, with the National Health Insurance having achieved very well against their targets, as well as communicable diseases, and most of the challenges lying with hospitals really and the program fix, largely because of the fact that we were heavily affected by the labor impasse. Many of the people who were participating in the strike came from the HRH branch, and then the ongoing challenge with the getting Civitas building safe and challenges ongoing with public works and payment of service providers led to us really facing serious challenges in some programs more than others. So finally, the issue has been resolved, and to overcome the other areas of underperformance, we've outlined where there were specific weaknesses. We've outlined what will be done to address those weaknesses, which I trust honorable members have all read. And just to say that at least the new lease agreement has now been signed, and we are planning to be fully settled in the new building by the beginning of March 2020, whereby we can return to full productivity and enhance our performance with fewer challenges due to lack of admin support and quite a bit of demoralization of our senior managers having to work by themselves without administrative support. And then in addition came COVID with the lockdown and working from home. So it's been challenging from the final quarter in this performance this year of reporting. So yes, I'm not going to go through these individually. You can go to the next slide, Ian, because NHI did quite well. Where there were challenges, I'd rather like to highlight. For example, with the forensic chemistry laboratories, we continue to focus on outstanding cases prioritized by the Justice Service Reform Committee. And we also are in the process of transitioning labs to the NHLS. And this process is already underway with the service provider about to be contracted to assist with the move. NAPISA bill, as I said, was delayed and will be established as an entity and the board appointed after the promulgation of the NAPISA Act. To address some of our other challenges in terms of training of our clinic committees, which we deem to be very important in terms of community participation in health and development, we encouraging provinces to secure a reasonable budget for this function, this important function. And we also urge provinces to second personnel so that the seconded personnel can assist in constituting mental health teams in the province. And clearly this area is being focused on in this financial year. Then, as I said, we finally managed once our number of incidents, once the incidence of COVID cases started to decline and settled, we now finally managed to have our first NHC, and both strategies were approved. But as I said, we did fast track some actions which could be implemented. And the four nursing colleges have submitted their programs for accreditation. Over now to the finance. The CFO to report on the financial information. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you, Chair. I'll run through the financials. And now my screen doesn't want to move.
If you end the show, Ian, and then
okay.
Then it'll usually.
All right, let me do that again then. Okay, can you see it now again?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, there we go. That's a good advice, Anwar. Okay, so looking at the financials, in terms of our six programs, the total spends at the end of the financial year came to on 99.2% of expenditure. You will see that all programs, or four of the programs, spent 98% and above, and two programs being administration and NHI sat at 92%, both of them. The quantum of the underspent was 422.2 million. And this is on the back of a budget of 51.1 billion for the financial year. In terms of economic classifications, our compensation stood at 96% of expenditure. Goods and services at 78%.
And that under expenditure, I will address it as well, but mostly on quantum due to the under expenditure on our indirect grants. The transfers was basically all spent at 99.9%, a small variance of 7.8 million, and I will address that now. And the same with our capital sitting at 95.1% of expenditure, and some of the underspends do relate to our indirect grant. But this percentage is quite, you know, it's a bit of an improvement on our previous financial year's expenditure. Just looking at the reasons for deviation in terms of compensation, in particular, program 2, 3, and 6 had some vacancies that were not filled in time. I think Dr. Andrews did allude to the fact that we're looking at a new organizational structure, and we will be filling a number of these vacancies. I must also say, with the onset or with the new proposed budget cuts that we're seeing within Treasury, there's quite a bit of cuts on the compensation of employees going forward, and that's going to put pressure on us further with the ceilings that were set by the National Treasury. On Program 1, some of the goods and services variances was the annual membership fees due to the rand-dollar exchange rates that were favorable in terms of what we initially budgeted for. We were still expecting some DIRCO accounts to be received and to be paid, which we haven't done. We didn't receive. There were quite a number of training events, especially towards the end of December, the end of January, February, and obviously in March, that were canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. We expected the Microsoft licenses and a number of the medical legal claims from our provinces to be paid, but we haven't received them in time. And our Microsoft licenses, we dealt with them in the current financial year for the most part. Obviously, because of the strike action on the occupational health and safety matters at Civitas, the need for consumables were also reduced, and there were some more savings on consumables. We also, because of the Civitas matter, had some disputes with the Department of Public Works in terms of their responsibility on the building and the fourth quarter leases. We did not pay them until we could settle some of these disputes in terms of the maintenance of our building. On program 2, the capacitation or the capitation model wasn't implemented as we alluded to during the financial year. There were some challenges with the reimbursement model and also the contribution that National Treasury was supposed to make to this model. It didn't materialize. The implementation of the warehouse system, in particular, had difficulties with the bidders that were resolved. And this also came about due to the fact that CETA had expired contracts and we couldn't immediately make use of their contracts available, and we had to request for deviations from Treasury and from CETA, and that ran beyond the fourth quarter of the financial year. Goods and services continued for Program 3, that there was a service provider for health communications which was appointed in the last quarter. Invoices were still awaited. There was a significant number of condoms that were received late in the financial year, and we also had a bit of a supply issue with the supply of condoms, but we honored the invoices that were presented to us. The annual TB day was cancelled due to the COVID-19, which resulted in a bit of an underspend, and there were some goods obviously ordered during COVID-19 that could not be delivered at time. In fact, we put out quite a number of orders on for COVID-19 after we reprioritized, but obviously the lead time for delivery took it beyond March. On Program 5, because we needed to wait for projects to be finalized on the health facility revitalization grant and indirect grants, some of the some of the projects were not equipped fully, and that will be addressed in this financial year and probably also in the second quarter.
We mentioned the underspending at the forensic laboratories. They had a particular issue with the IT system, which put some pressure on them in terms of putting out orders on the logos. We have addressed it to a large extent. And although some of the IT systems availability is still not always reliable, for the most part, we've addressed this matter. And I think Gail has explained the matter on the Traditional Health Practitioners Councils. Under Program 3, mostly our biggest transfers and subsidies come from Program 3 and Program 5. We have, in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, transferred all the funding that we have to transfer to provinces on conditional grants. We have done that. The matter here is that NGOs that do not comply to certain service level agreement requirements and do not produce financial statements in terms of PFMA, we cannot transfer those funds to them, and that's amounted to about 7.8 million for the financial year. So it's not a big amount. On the capital assets on the program one, the security system upgrade that was proposed for Civitas, we took it under review, especially given the fact that we would most likely move out of Civitas very soon, as the current lease with the new building has now been finalized. And although this probably would happen towards the end of the financial year, you know, putting in the capital investment now wouldn't make sense. And the same goes for the National Surveillance Center, pending the relocation plan on the Civitas. But those plans are available and will be implemented. On Program 3, as we said, some medical equipment that we reprioritized for the COVID-19 was not received before the financial year end. And we've actually dealt with those payments in the new financial year on the new COVID fund application. The refurbishment of health facilities can only be paid as well when the projects reach a certain stage. You would know that we can only capitalize when a project reaches practical completion stage, at which time we can then capitalize the equipment to the project in particular. On Program 6, there was quite a large tender process underway to recapitalize the laboratory equipment. Some of the tenders needed to be reissued, and we also had some one or two legal matters to contend with, but those tenders have been put out and will be evaluated and has been evaluated in the current financial year. And then, yeah, I think I'll just speak about some of the system issues at forensic laboratories. So this, Chair, in the main, deals with the National Department of Health budget. I will look at the conditional grants for the sector as well. So our expenditure on the direct conditional grants, and I mean this, just put a rider on this, to say that we will still get the final audited numbers probably towards the end of October. So there is a possibility that the expenditure could change, but this is what we had at the time or recently. So we don't expect a big move on this, but in any case, the conditional grant spending stood at 98% spent by provinces against which is about 45 billion of a 46 billion adjusted budget, and it's slightly better than the previous financial year, where we spent 97% of this budget. They are obviously contributors to the underspending, and the health facility revitalization grant spent 96% of the budget, close to 97%, and there were some delays in provinces on project implementation. But again, this is an improvement on what we've seen previous financial years. The NHI grants, Chair, if you recall, is that initially it was an indirect grant. It was converted mid-year to a direct grant of about 298 million. Most provinces did implement the business plan as expected, but the total spend came to 90.5% of that.
But we do expect a little bit of improvement as provinces finalize their accounts. The other grants on HPV, the HIV, the National Tertiary Service Grant, and the Professional Training Development Grant, they all spent 99 to 98% of expenditure. And Chair, you will also recall that these grants are essentially supplementary to the provincial equitable share allocations of provinces. So what you would expect them to be really close to 100% spent as they are. The one grant that shows an overspent is the human resource capacitation grant. This was a grant that was also an indirect grant in the previous financial year, and was now converted to a direct grant, and it was mostly there to assist provinces with the appointment of interns and other statutory positions. The Western Cape has shown an overspend on this grant, but we actually expect most provinces to either spend this grant 100%, and if they do overspend, they have to probably make it good from the provincial equitable share. This is just a summary that shows what I've explained now in terms of the total budget allocated, what we've transferred in terms of the DORA, the expenditure by province. So you can see obviously some total grants that some provinces have overspent. And then also we look at the provincial transfers of these of what was transferred by the provincial treasuries to our departments of health. Again, this is just the same breakdown, but now by province, to give you an idea of what the provinces has spent in total on the direct grants allocated to themselves. The indirect grants mostly deals with the NHI position. The conditional grant spending stood at 89%. There was about 1.4 billion of a 1.5 billion expenditure, and it's slightly below the acceptable norm, although still an improvement compared to other financial years. The major contributors to the underspend was in our personal services component, the GP contracting capitation model. As I explained, it was not implemented. There was some lack of capacity for the reimbursement of health practitioners. And we also expected some input from our national treasury together with ourselves. The non-personal services components, the medicine delivery program, there was delays in submissions of invoices by service providers, but we also received a number of donations and support from donors on this grant, and that's some of the reasons for the underspend. Information systems and outlook clinic, the expiry of the contract on equipment, as I mentioned, especially on the CETA contracts, affected us quite a bit. We did obtain a deviation in the latter part of the fourth quarter, but we couldn't get suppliers to deliver in time for them to invoice us properly to effect the payment. So just again, to look at the table summary of this, in total, 1.5 billion was a revised budget for the NHI indirect conditional grant. Expenditure, I can take you through it quickly again. Expenditure percentage on the revised component, about 99% of the adjusted budget. The ring fence amount on the Mpopo hospital, about 89%. Lesser expenditure, as I explained, on the medical surveillance systems, coming to mental health services and oncology, about 99% spent of the amount. And as I mentioned, the contracting in budget was converted to a direct grant in the financial year. So the next number of slides, if you allow me not to go through them, it's just a picture of each direct conditional grant, together with the various explanations on that. I can go through it, but I will take my guidance from you. So if you allow me just to go to the last slide, I just want to demonstrate something. So on the last slide, these are the rollover requests that we put through
to the provincial and national treasuries for them to consider rollovers for the current financial year. I can speak confidently on the national position to say that we have not received any rollover approvals from national treasury, nor did we receive any funds based on the what they call an unforeseen, unavoidable expenditure. So no funds have flown to ourselves on this. I will probably get a picture on adjustment stage of what rollovers were approved in the provinces. But this is what we have as national facilitators with provinces to request for rollovers. At the end of the presentation, while I'm on the floor, if you can allow me just one point. Just to say that with the current fiscal positions that we're seeing from Treasury and the indicative budgets, we're looking at cuts at national level of about 3.5 through to about 8.7 billion over the MTF period. These are cuts of about 6%, 8% and 12% over the MTF period. Effectively, if those cuts are realized, it will affect the sector. If the same cuts are realized on the provincial equitable share, it will come to about 107 billion rand cut to the sector over the three financial years. We have made several scenarios to the National Treasury in terms of what the impact would be with the wage freeze or what the impact would be without the wage freeze on goods and services and infrastructure. But you can imagine that it's going to be quite huge. And potentially it will take us back to budgets that were there in 2015-16. So in terms of, in real terms, it takes us back quite a number of years. So at some stage you would need to engage probably yourselves together with Treasury to see how we can mitigate some of these cuts that are being expected. Jay, if you agree, then I'll end it there. Thank you.
All right. Okay, thank you to the department and the presentations led by Dr. Andrews and the follow-up by Ian van der Merwe. I have noted the members, honorable members, would like to engage with the presentation. May I read your numbers so that you follow each one another? I don't have to come in between yourselves. Just note your number. The first member to ask will be Honorable Van Staden. He's number one. Then he is going to be followed by Honorable Kwahube. She's number two. Third one is Honorable Sheikh Imam. Number four is Honorable Janji. Number five, Honorable Chilitsi. Number six, Honorable Kela. I have provisionally put Mama Shengwa here as number seven because I haven't seen her indication. If she is available to ask, she's number seven, and then I'll come after her. If honorable members can start in that order, the first one being Van Staden, who will then be followed by Kwahube without my interruptions, Sheikh, Janji, Chilitsi, and Kela. And the last one, Mama Shengwa. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the underspending of a department this financial year of 389.2 million, it's for the adjusted budget appropriation of 51 million. Just a comment on that. Last year, this department underspent with 1 billion rand. And in 2018-19, 86 million was underspent at hospitals. I just want to know if these problems were resolved and how. And then the posts not being filled during the year. I just want to know what post is not being filled and what is the reason for that and for what period of time and how many posts we are talking about. On a program one, the expenditure of 45.8 million due to unexpenditure of goods and services. Can they just be a bit elaborated on these goods and services? And it appears that the department is being built for buildings which is not a tenant of. I just want to know how long is Public Works trying to resolve this problem? And for how long has the department been built for buildings not owned by the department, and what is it amounting to? On program two, I just have a question on the Civitas building, because I saw last week in Pretoria, it was locked, and I'm glad we are speaking on this matter today. I just want to know, why was this building declared unsafe? Is the matter now resolved? But yeah, you have signed a contract for a new building, and that I understand that the employees in that period of time were working from home. If we can just get clarity on that. Then on program 3, slide 17, I'm a bit concerned when I see mental health that the contract with service providers was cancelled. We know what happened in Gauteng a few years ago when this tragedy of life is a demeanor happened due to contracts which has been cancelled, and we must be very careful that such a tragedy don't happen again. So I think attention must be given to that, and I just want some more clarity about that contract and if the patient's lives is not now in danger. On program 4, it stated there that the under expenditure is mainly due to goods and services resulting from training and development that did not take place. Can it be more specific what we are talking about here? And then under program 5 on slide 31, with termination of contracts, and that there was also delay in procurement of medical equipment. You remember, Honorable Chairperson, I think last year, at the end of last year, we had the same problem in the department, and we have spoken at the beginning of this year about it again. Remember, the Auditor General said last year that there's medical equipment not being used, and now we have a delay in procurement of medical equipment. And we have this problem in our public hospitals and provincial hospitals, and I think it needs urgent. It should have been given urgent attention a long time ago, but we are still sitting with this problem. And I want to know from this department, what are they going to do to solve this problem for once and for all? And if we can go to program 6, slide 41, the nursing colleges which were not fully accredited. If you recall, Honorable Chairperson, last year, I think it was October in this committee, we had the same, we had this problem on our table, which regulations was not set out by the minister and the same minister of health and the same minister of higher education for nursing colleges to be accredited. Now we see that four nursing colleges is still outstanding to be accredited. It's almost a year later. So the problem is not resolved. And in that meeting last year in October, the DG of this department, I don't have a name before me now, was a lady. She assured us that day in that meeting, before we walked out there last year, that everybody will go back to school and to colleges. And now we hear today that four nursing colleges weren't fully accredited yet. And it looks like the problem is still staying with us. What is this department going to do to sort out this problem? Because this client cannot carry on like this, chair. Really. It is a bit of a problem. I just want to see if I have some more notes here. No, that's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the department for the presentation. I have a generic question, and which will be drilled down to more specifics, broken down into three. The one question is the presentation that was given by Dr. Gail Andrews, speaking about the fact that 45% of the targets that were set by the department have been met. Now, you know, I went through great detail to try and figure out whether or not some of the failures of meeting those targets were linked directly to the department's response to COVID-19. And some of them, quite frankly, were not. Some of the reasons were from just sheer tardiness. For instance, the mental health issue around cancelled contracts, the community healthcare worker program that you know, didn't take off because community healthcare workers were not equipped with the lists that they needed to produce. And so they only have HIV and AIDS sort of lists that are available. So the point I'm trying to make here is that some of these things are not due to the pandemic and that the department had redirected its resources in response to the pandemic. Some of them were just sheer tardiness. And I'm failing to understand why that is the case. Had it been a situation where it was merely a situation of redirecting resources to the response to the pandemic, it's a completely understandable thing. But based on what you have given and the reasons you've given, some of these things are completely preventable. For instance, under primary health care, some of the issues here was that some of the clinics were closed due to infrastructure problems. And then later, some of them were closed due to the COVID-19 situation. But again, some of these things are completely preventable things that were allowed to happen. And I'm not understanding, because 45% is a dismal result, bearing in mind, obviously, the pandemic. But a lot of these things are not always linked to the pandemic response. So that's why perhaps I need to just be enlightened as to what could have potentially gone wrong in some of these things. And then the last is directed to Ian around the budget cuts. Obviously, the budget cuts are things, something that is completely unavoidable. You talk about 100 billion rand budget cuts in the medium term. And so what I would really like to see from the department is, you know, I understand that you've had an engagement with Treasury, but what are some of the, I mean, where are we looking to cut? Because already, as things stand, the department is really on a shoestring budget in order to be able to fund some of its programs, in order to be able to fund equitable shares of the provinces. So if we have this unavoidable scenario where we have to cut 6, 8, and 12% respectively, where are we looking to cut, which programs, and what are some of the efficiency mechanisms are we going to use in order for us to be able to cut budgets, but at the same time still be able to deliver a key service? Because that's not coming across very well. And I'm worried that if it's not being presented to us, is it being thought about? Is it being planned? Because ultimately, budget cuts are probably unavoidable. South Africa doesn't have the money, but how are we going to implement efficiencies and efficiency programs to be able to at least deliver a service in spite of the impending cuts that we're going to be facing? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for that presentation. I think I can continue. Yeah, my first question is, I'd like you to highlight for me or explain, why is the National Department opposing the health insurance scheme where health services are being provided at a very low cost? And it would appear that there's objection from us, and I can't seem to understand that. That's the first thing. I find that the department does a fantastic job in terms of spending the money. But when it comes to the outcomes, the performance is very dismal. And I'd like you to explain, what are you doing to try and correct that so that you can balance the amount of money that is spent and ensure that the outcomes are positive as well, or you reach most of your targets? Now, the other thing is I want to know is this, that a few years ago, under the previous Minister of Health, it was agreed and announced by the previous president of the country, President Zuma as well, that all healthcare workers in the country will be made permanent with full benefits. Remember that we even established that there were staff that worked for up to 40 years and went home with no benefits whatsoever. I'd like you to tell us what is the latest in that. I know that Eastern Cape was one of the first ones to have started the process, and I know KwaZulu-Natal. Dr. Dlomo, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, will confirm that that process had started in KZN as well. Then I'd like to know, what are you doing about recruiting more and more GPs for the NHI program, and why are you not also using the services of the clinical associates, which you have spent millions of rands in training? Then the other problem I've got is the payment of 30 days. Why is the payments, and I don't think we can, as this portfolio committee, accept that people don't want to get paid, so they don't send the invoices. I've got a case now in the Eastern Cape. I found your CFO there and the MEC's department. They bought stuff, they're just not paying the people. So it seems to be a serious problem. I also noticed that some places you're overspending, some places you're underspending. And I'm not sure, you know, whether you believe that is good financial practice that you take from Peter to pay Paul. I'd like you to actually comment on that. Now, we've been caught off guard in South Africa as a result of COVID-19. And one of the reasons we've been caught is when it came to comorbidities, which is diabetes and hypertension and things. And remember, we've been talking about this often in the media and in our committees, that we need to move to a preventative system. I'd like you to tell us, what are you doing in order to ensure that we move away now from this curative system to a preventative system, get people to start eating healthy, living healthy, including ensuring that the city health is brought in line with national health, so that people that are producing food products and beverages and things like that are held accountable and ensure that they put more emphasis on health in terms of that. Then I'd like to know what you're doing about turning around the blood alcohol toxicological test, which, you know, the time frame for those, it appears to be a problem that we are having. Now, Treasury has said that you need to not to employ any more staff. I'd like you to tell us how they impact. And then you explained to us that many of these contracts have been standing because of the poor performance of contractors. I'd like you to tell us the impact and the cost. And lastly, could you tell us how much of money we spend in the health sector in South Africa from importing goods rather than using local produced goods? And if we do not use locally, what are you doing to ensure that they are locally produced? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also join the colleagues in appreciating the presentation, both presentations by Dr. Gale and Ian. You know, most of the questions maybe I would have asked have been asked, but I need to be educated. Ian says we used 99.2% of the budget. Gail is saying we achieved 45%.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this 99.2% going to if it is not in the achievement of the service delivery? The other thing that is of concern, much as they have achievements, but they have more of the targets that are not achieved. I'm particularly worried about the mental health. I'm worried about the rehabilitation teams that seem not to have been spread across the provinces. Worried about oncology, because remember that we were on the media for wrong reasons as far as oncology is concerned. And can they also tell us how much of the money has been re-diverted due to COVID? And can we also get an explanation on the forensic labs, particularly the I know that in the Eastern Cape we're sending specimens to KZN and also to Pretoria. Can they tell us if there's anything that has been done to remedy the situation? And one other worry is the provinces that are not improving in as far as audit outcomes are concerned. Can we be told what are the remedial steps that have been taken to help the provinces so that they can improve? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Chair. My name is Chidinze Mnyai. I had a problem of the load shedding. I hope Honorable Godan will find time to resolve that matter of ESCOM. Yeah, my input, Honorable Chair, is the following. But maybe before I made an input, it's very, very imperative to try to deal with the following issues before I make my own input. I think the issue of the relating to the training and accreditation of the institution, it's a matter that appeared last year already. So it's not new. So we are well aware of it, and we understood that February, March this year, we've been really disrupted by the COVID-19, which I would always argue has brought unintended consequences to our own healthcare systems. So first and foremost, it's very important, I must put it on record, that we really welcome the report both put forward by Dr. Gail Andrews and as well as the CFO, Ian van der Merwe. So the report really is very intense. It's better than the last year report in terms of being informative, sharing details without hiding any inch of an issue within the department. So the point relating to, I mean, COVID-19 has been the denominator in everything that we do. So let's not macromanage the department with regard to operation, what they must do and what they must not do. For us is to hold them accountable, because executive implement in the context of separation of power and the judiciary's independence. So the key issue is that let's not macromanage the department. We can hold them accountable, but not macromanage them. So Minister of Health, I think I should put it in record again, he's not the Minister of Finance. So there's no need to mourn about the Minister of Health cutting, because the person responsible for the public purse in the Republic of South Africa is Mr. Tito Mboweni. If we have anything to mourn about, the budget being cut across the department in the light of really difficult fiscal position, we need really to direct that particular energy and concern to the Minister of Finance. And I must put it on record, Dr. Zweli Mkhize Mavhovhu Kabazela, he is not the Minister of Finance. I'm sure he would want to have much more budget rather than the reduced budget. So the department, with regard to NHI, brought the NHI bill before us, you know, costed it, they did everything that was required. And I cannot get it or understand it as to why we should really attempt to argue that the department is opposing the NHI, something that themselves would have prepared and put it forward before us. So I don't know, Honorable Sheikh, whether that you have some evidence or that you can provide to us that really the department does not support the NHI health scheme. So if there is, please share with us so that we can engage the department. How can it be so that they bring up a bill of NHI before us? On the other hand, they attempt to oppose the very same bill they brought before us. And I'm sure issues of finances, public purse, it's highly contested. You know, in fact, it's politically contested as well. The issue of the public purse, the budget, highly contested. And I'm sure if there's a problem around the issues of the wage bill reduction or not willing to appoint many people, we should not blame the Minister of Health or Minister of Health. Indeed, we can direct that matter. If there's anything to do with Treasury austerity measure, that may be the basis perhaps arising from the IMF loan condition. So that couldn't be with the Minister of Health. Minister of Health, I know for a fact, he needs the budget. So, honorable members, I will put forward, honorable chairperson, Dr. Lomu, that we consider approval of this report because really the team health worked very hard. Last year, I was on top of them. But this time around, they have really developed, they've prepared, they've informed us even a very critical information. The report is so transparent, unlike the previous report. They are so transparent and put everything forward. And I'm sure what could not be implemented will be as a result in the main of COVID-19. And any reason wanting to find an alternative pretext as to why the department could not implement, yet we knew that COVID-19 has drastically, has really negatively impacted our country so badly to an extent that it impacted even on the operation. We should not come here and behave as if there was no COVID-19 within the Republic of South Africa and the rest of the world. So therefore, my view, Honorable Chairperson, is that we must adopt this report because it's a very good report with some weaknesses which they believe we can improve on them because we just come now to level one alert. So there could be some progress trying to respond to those issues of concern raised by the members. That will be my view, Honorable Chairperson. I move for the adoption for this report. I know you have not asked for that because I think it's a process matter. Thank you very much.
Honorable Gela, please come on.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. Let me also welcome the report from the Department of Health. Some of the questions that I wanted to raise, Chair, has been already asked. The issue of vacant post in the department. But my concern, Chair, is the issue of NHI, the key position not filled in quarter four. So I just want to check for how long and what is the plan for the department to make sure that they fill those vacant posts. But we understand, Chair, that as Honorable Munyai has indicated, that as the country, we have experienced something that we didn't know it will come, the issue of COVID-19, which has made things not to happen as normally. But we appreciate really the good work that the department is doing. They were working really under pressure as a Department of Health, because it was in the front line to make sure that we prioritize and also we make sure that we save lives of our people. So in short, Chair, we really appreciate their work and hoping that they will improve. And the issue of payment, if they can just pay, as Honorable Sheikhs have indicated, the delays of paying people, if they can just sort it out, and also all the things that they must make sure that they sort it out, if they can do that in time, so that it doesn't reflect very bad in our department as a Department of Health. But so far, we really appreciate the good work that you are doing as a department, as officially. You are really committed to your work. And I want to second Comrade Chair, Comrade Munyai, to say that I'm seconding the approval of the report as it is. It will improve, they will improve actually where they must improve and also implement what is outstanding from them. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Honorable Keller, for the sake of this meeting, we shall say you are seconding what Honorable Munyai and not Comrade Munyai. That is another platform where you call each other comrades. But anyway, I know
it's I'm not, so sorry, Chair.
Yeah, okay. I know it's not always easy sometimes. Thanks. Mashema said that she's covered. Let me then pose my three questions, three and a half. Thanking the leadership of the department for coming in through to take us through these two reports. Firstly, I don't think Dr. Andrews, it is a good story to tell that there has been an underperformance of the department here and there because of Miss Janet Hunter supporting Northwest. Now, you are then saying to us, maybe we should call her back from Northwest, or we should stay with an underperforming area where she was a leader at. Now, I don't think that's a statement that we can really be able to listen to. I can't even ask how we are going to aim to resolve that, because you are probably like telling us, why don't you instruct us to bring back Miss Janet Hunter from Northwest? Only then we are going to be doing well on that area that she was part of. Please resolve that matter without really bringing it to the portfolio committee for us to look into. We need to commend you and maybe encourage you to keep on doing well on the malaria control. Malaria control is a SADC program. If South Africa is one of those countries that is expected to eliminate malaria. So some of the challenges we expected we had in Mpumalanga have now been resolved. We are happy to continue doing that, because countries like Zambia can only reduce malaria if countries like South Africa, Swaziland, Mozambique are eliminating malaria. So you probably need to work even harder so that next time you come, you would say, yes, not only have you got the control of malaria, but you have now eliminating it, or have eliminated. There are countries in the world who have the problem of malaria and they have since eliminated it. So let's be counted as one of those, because our good performance on malaria control has such a positive impact on the countries right above us, and that will have an overall improvement on the mortality and the morbidity of African countries, in all African countries. So it's a real responsibility of us, the duty that we need to perform as this country to make sure we set a good platform for the other countries. I think there was a good story to listen to on radiology oncology. Honorable Janti picked up a different vibe there. So I think maybe you'll explain that along, check. I'm not sure. I picked up that you seem to have done fairly well there. I am the third member of the portfolio committee here to record my unhappiness on mental health services in the department. Now, not forgetting that we come from a history of acid mining, and therefore have to prepare all of us to be alert when it comes to mental health services. Yes, we can agree that we need to support you to ask for more funding to support health services. But it is within our own plans as a department to always under budget for mental health, and therefore have these problems and these challenges. And now, there's a problem that we really need to go above. Why should we always underperform on mental health services? It's our own choice to really under budget and therefore find challenges, really. Please, let's improve on that going forward. My last part, and I want to call Ian to listen to this part. As I start, he may not know why I think it is important for him to know this. The department has done fairly well on central chronic medicines dispensing and distribution, this MDD. Very few of us, including yourself, knew that this program you started would have such a huge impact. Because for some colleagues who do not understand it, you have had patients who were able to get their medication even on COVID, because medicines was distributed by the Department of Health to the nearest supermarket where the patients are living, to the nearest church, mosque, temple, or wherever these patients were finding themselves. And that was actually something that we never anticipated, but in COVID, with COVID, there's nothing that has actually disadvantaged to a great extent patients that are on chronic medication. So that must be commended. But immediately I do that, Ian, I do not find a very strong program getting up, yet you have put it on your annual performance plan, the program related to control of the non-communicable diseases. Now, let me give this, Ian, so that in the next time we meet, probably you don't have to wait for the next time. I need you to give me this answer. Not today, you will not be able to do it today because it is a bit complicated. There are South Africans who are on treatment for hypertension, and they start much earlier than the rest of the world, at the age of 45. In Southern America, people are not on hypertensive treatment yet. In Japan, in China, the same. They are not on treatment. About 5 million. Take an example of about maybe you will have a good result. You will have a good statistic. Let me say 5 million. You will come up with the right figure when you actually do this mathematics for me. And another 6 million are South Africans that are on diabetes at the age of 45 again. Another maybe 8 million are South Africans who are both on diabetes and hypertensive treatment. So we are well close to 15 million South Africans who either have hypertensive treatment, diabetic treatment, or both. And each of those South Africans from age 45, yes, are getting treatment well over 600 rand per month. It's almost close to be getting a grant like our old person now. If you have South Africans who are on that money, 600 per month for 15 million South Africans, at the age of 45, at my age, at 59, 60, you can then tell me how much money we have used to actually treat those South Africans. And you still have to treat them for another 15 years when they start dying at the age of 75. Why are we not seeing this, Ian, as a potential space to prevent and take away that money and use it elsewhere? because other countries are doing it. Now, our programs on non-communicable disease prevention are not very strong. We now know that if South Africans at the age of 45, we want to avoid them getting hypertensive. In fact, about 10% of them are getting hypertensive because of genetic makeup. They are not getting hypertensive because they are getting hypertensive because we have not allowed them to exercise, to get a good diet, and force people to say you shall exercise, and therefore we give you one tablet from 45 instead of 10 tablets, and therefore we save the resources of the country, and then you can build more hospitals and more clinics. Please, Ian, go. You don't know this because you think it's about clinicians. Tell those clinicians you need money and you need to save it. They must actually provide plans and do them. You do have this in your honors performance plan, but we are not seeing it on the ground. And therefore, it is really not a good story to listen to decrease the amount of people that you are putting on treatment, on hypertensive diabetes, and all that. Please, then let us get responses from all the, including all the other DGs who are listening, DDGs who are listening, if they have. We give you back to now to respond to the honorable members' questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to all the honorable members for their questions as well as comments.
Raise your volume, Dr. Andrews.
Chair. Yes, I was thanking all the honourable members for their questions as well as comments, and thanks also to you, Chairperson. I'd just like to highlight a few points because there were some themes that were quite recurrent, and much of it related to the financing, the finances or money spent by the department, and against the target achievement, which was almost half of the money spent. Now, just to say that we had the labor impasse, which Ms. Rennie will speak more about when she speak about the whole Civitas situation, but there were more than 200 people who were involved in this labor impasse, which is a sizable amount. And therefore, even though they were not there and helping us to be productive and reach our targets, they were still earning their salaries. So that remains an ongoing dispute, and we have not finalized that matter yet. Then the issue of the nursing colleges, which was raised by Honorable Shalitse, as well as I think it's Honorable Van Staden, relating to why we have not been able to implement the accredited new nursing training programs in all the nursing colleges. Just to say that all 10 nursing colleges were designated by the Minister of Higher Education to offer the training programs, but four of the colleges were delayed due to firstly, some competency issues in finalizing the new curricula, but they did it in time and then submitted it to SANC and CHE, but CHE, which is the Council on Higher Education, was delaying them in approving their curriculum. So, but they are actually designated to offer the new programs. But Dr. Makanya can expand on that a bit if she wants to further. Dr. Makanya is also acting at the moment for the program three. There was a couple of questions directed by honorable members dealing with both prevention of NCDs, the poor effort that appears to be made by us as a department on mental health and strengthening mental health, as well as the rehabilitation teams. Although we did achieve our target on the rehabilitation teams, I think maybe Honorable Dianki misunderstood us there, as Chairperson said.
Dr. Andrews, please unpack the word thank for the sake of all of us in this portfolio committee. Okay.
That is the South African Nursing Council, which is the regulator for all nursing curricula to ensure that they are in keeping with the competency frameworks of the Professional Statutory Council, which is the South African Nursing Council. But now, because of the new Higher Education Act, we also have to still pass the criteria set by the Council on Higher Education, who is another regulator for higher education, and this has led to the delay in the programs being offered by the other four colleges. But that all colleges were designated is a fact. So I just like then to ask Dr. Makanya and or members of her team to comment on the issues related to mental health and non-communicable diseases, and how we're going to strengthen prevention around communicable diseases. Also the comments made on our community health worker program, because they can be a big resource in strengthening community health workers, and why there was that underperformance in screening by the community health workers. They best placed to respond to it. Dr. Anban Pillay will respond to the questions related to NHI, and Ms. Rennie will speak to some of our challenges we had with public work, both in terms of billing and payment of service providers, as well as the other challenges we experienced in Civitas, as was asked by Honourable Van Staden and also Honourable Kwabe. And then the CFO can conclude with responding to all the finance questions, of which there were many from Honourable Van Staden. Thank you, Chair. So if we can start maybe with the NHI, and then we can be followed by Dr. Makanya on the work of Program 3, and then Ms. Rennie and the CFO can conclude. Thank you, Chair. Honourable Chair.
Okay. So number one will do with NHI. Number two will be Dr. Makanya. Number three will be Renee. And number four will be Ian. Is that how you say it?
Yes, sir.
Right. One after the other, we will not interrupt you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the questions relating to the NHI, I think the first one relating to the low-cost benefit option, I think that's what Honorable Imam Sheikh was talking about. The low-cost benefit option is in its current form not a medical scheme in its true sense, in the way it's regulated by the Council for Medical Schemes. It's not a product that's managed at the national department. It falls under the classification as a medical scheme, or potentially doing the business of a medical scheme. And so the Council for Medical Scheme regulates it. And so the Council has been engaging with these low-cost benefit option products. And they have been managing that to make sure. Remember that a low-cost benefit option effectively is selling a product that may appear to be like an insurance, but it needs to provide appropriate protection to those that take it, so that they don't at the end of the day take a product and then realize it actually doesn't give them all the cover that they need. There were products at one stage that were proposing, for example, that a person will be allowed under the product to have a diagnosis of HIV. But the treatment for HIV will not be paid for by the health insurance product. That would have to be for the state. So the only thing the product was doing was providing funding for the diagnostic. And so that's not very useful as a product to help somebody in terms of health insurance. And so the Council for Medical Schemes has been doing that. Dr. Tulare is also here on the call and sits on the Council for Medical Schemes and is also very more familiar with this matter. So when I respond to the other questions, if I can ask that she also responds to this particular issue. Chair, I was asked by my colleagues to also just assist on this question relating to the contracting as it relates to contracts for the mental health teams as well as the oncology. So this is a bit of a long history, so if you bear with me. The department wanted to contract health professionals in its understanding so that it can develop the NHI contracting work. At the same time, try and solve some of the problems that the public health system has. And at that time, when we were designing this, there were challenges in terms of mental health, as there were backlogs in terms of assessment of people. And I think Mr. Pakati can provide more detail, was responsible for the mental health program around that. Similarly, in the case of oncology, there are similar challenges. And so the idea was, can we provide a contracting mechanism where we can bring in private practitioners in order to deliver services in public facilities and do that in a manner that would also give us some learnings around how the NHI would work. And that was the thinking around it. When we put out the, we had to obviously go out on a contract for this. And the initial contract that we had put out, the intention was at the time that we would get a consortium of people, you know, to deliver the service. And it ended up that universities were proposed as an option. So there was a closed tender process of universities who would be interested in providing this. So universities would effectively contract health professionals, and those health professionals will then deliver services in public facilities, and the universities would then reimburse the health professionals, and we would have only a direct relationship with the university. And this would be done through a special purpose vehicle that the university would have. And so when we started this process, the plans that are in our APP that you're seeing today were designed at the beginning of the financial year. However, the funding for this came through much later. And so we had started the procurement process after the APP effectively. The consequence of which was that we had a number of delays in the bidders responding and them asking for extensions, et cetera, the universities, that is. At the end of the process, there was a winning bidder, but the problem was that in addition to this being universities, there were objections raised with the minister at the time that this is effectively labor broking, because the department is not contracting these health professionals directly, but is doing it via a university. And so that was seen as a problem. Secondly, the provincial colleagues were of the view that they don't want the monies to go to the health professionals via this consortia. They would rather have the funds transferred to them and they will manage it themselves. So given all of these tensions and debates, the project didn't take off. And consequently, this was already in our APP with the intention of taking these funds and contracting it like the way that was described. But given all of the problems, it didn't happen, because in order for us to contract and deliver a service in a province, we do need provincial concurrence on it. And our provincial colleagues were of the view that they would rather have the money transferred into their budget and they would try and do it themselves. So that's what the reason why there was this the issue about the contract being cancelled as such. So it wasn't an existing service, it was going to be a new service. And the idea was to understand how we could use it to contract firstly, and secondly, use the contract team to deal with something that's a backlog in the public sector, in this case, mental health and oncology were chosen as areas that we could potentially intervene and reduce the backlogs. Chair, if I can allow, if you can allow Dr. Tulare to just also come in on the low-cost benefit option and the contracting as well, because she's been involved with that as well. Dr. Tulare?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to add on to what Dr. Pillay had indicated on the low-cost benefit option, the target market for the low-cost benefit options are usually low-income earners and people from poor households. They are sold a product that promises them many things that in reality are not feasible. The first thing that they promise is that you will have unlimited GP consultations. And in reality, and we know how even the medical schemes that are regulated are operating, there is nothing like unlimited GP consultations. In reality, it's usually 3 to 4 GP consultations per annum. So poor people and low-income earners are promised something that these schemes are not going to be able to meet. The second thing is that, as Dr. Pillay had indicated, they do not cover for certain critical interventions that would be required. The one example is on the tests that they are willing to conduct, but they are not prepared to pay for the services that would emanate from the type of investigation that has been done. They also do not provide for admission of this low-income earners into other facilities. So they use the state as a designated, they use the state as a provider without negotiating with the state to be a designated service provider. So they are even abusing that relationship. They've taken the money from poor households and they cannot provide for that. The other thing that we have noted with these low-cost benefit options is that there's a high component of broker fees and administration costs that go into those that are running these options. And therefore, it really, really undermines a situation where we would want to see services being comprehensive and less going into administration and non-healthcare costs. So we think that, you know, the low-cost benefit options fail to provide financial risk protection for those that have been sold these options. But what CMS has done to provide fairness, we have allowed a consultative process to be conducted so that all people can express their opinions. Even the people that have been marching in the streets saying that we are depriving them of a medical scheme coverage have been invited to form part of the discussions. And we hope that they are going to be participating in those discussions. But from the vantage point of CMS, we think that we are really, really selling a pie in the sky for low-income households and poor households. That's on low-cost benefit options, Chair. Then on contracting, we just wanted to indicate that the model that we had designed for capitation was not a model that would be implementable because it was not looking more at what you want to look at, being performance-based reinvestment, where you want to look at what the practitioner is doing and the health outcomes related to their interventions and reinvesting based on improving of health outcomes. And that's the principle, actually, of NHI, that you want to look at health outcomes. It's not just churning out number of patients that have been seen, but we want to make sure that if you see a patient, it's a diabetic, your patient does not get amputated. If ever they get amputated, it must be also the responsibility of the practitioner to make sure that their patients comply, they are educated, and they understand the implications of the interventions and their disease. So we would want to see a situation where the model takes that into account, and we look at performance of providers rather than just saying, I have seen 30 patients or I have seen 100 patients, and then you don't look at the health outcomes. That's all that I have to add onto the input that Dr. Anban Pile made. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair, can, if I may come in, if I'm allowed, just to remind Dr. Pillay that they did not answer Honorable Geller's question as to why the post for NHI was not filled, although we did outline it in the report, but maybe they just want to underscore it for Honorable Geller. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Andrews. I forgot about that question. Yes, so the posts relating to the NHI could only be filled with the concurrence of the DPSA as well as the bill being finalized by the portfolio committee, because we wanted to make sure that the posts that we fill are aligned to what would be the overall structure. So that's why we had to wait until we had clearance from both from the DPSA as well as from the portfolio committee around the final structure of the bill, so that we understand how we need to structure our human resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Anban Chair. Then we may move to Dr. Makanya, as Chair had indicated.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and Dr. Andrews for the opportunity. Honorable Chair, I would respond on the issues that are related to mental health and NCDs, and specifically the mental health issue. I think Dr. Anban Pillay has covered it, because it was issues around contracting of service providers that was affecting both mental health and cancer. So that area has been covered. The second area was why are we not focusing and moving on from curative to community oriented, preventive and promotive healthcare, particularly for all NCDs. And Honorable Chair also highlighted a critical example that really the experience of COVID actually highlighted the gaps in terms of integrated services. Honorable Chair, I would like to indicate that we are quite cognizant of the impact of COVID across programs, and we have worked on actually developing plans that are going to the plans of modification of service in the context of COVID. And these plans have been confirmed internally, specifically with regards to non-communicable diseases. We have identified areas that would need to be strengthened, and we have developed plans around that, particularly on public communication, that our communication messages should be integrated across COVID, communicable, non-communicable diseases, because this information is required by communities at the same time. So we've really developed action plans around areas that were identified as gaps. As the Chair indicated, the need for early detection, we have also looked at strengthening our own surveillance system so that we can be able to even detect early those NCDs, particularly hypertension and diabetes, that normally do not become symptomatic at an early age. So we would be prioritizing screening for NCD, ensuring that it is integrated into broader screening that is taking place at a community level. So overall, Chair, with each of these interventions, we are looking into strengthening our community-oriented interventions to ensure that services are integrated, particularly at preventive and promotive, following a specific focus on screening and contact tracing across all programs. Thanks, Chair. I think those were the two that related to communicable and non-communicable disease. And also welcome, Chair, the commendation around the performance of the malaria program. With nursing colleges, I think Dr. Andrews covered the key areas. Honorable Chair, I think what we are celebrating is that all government colleges have been established in 9 provinces, and we even say 10, including the military health services, as legitimate providers of all of nursing qualifications that are within the post-school system. That has been an achievement. Accreditation are process-related issues. The reason why the 4 colleges did not start the programs this year is because their accreditation, by the time of the cut-off date that was set by CHE, they had not submitted. But between December, they submitted around November last year, and that process is actually towards completion. But I would like to assure members that plans were in place, that in terms of the old curriculum, outputs of almost 500 students per program, per province, for the next 4 years is still intact while we are ensuring the phase in, phase out between the old and the new qualifications. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Valerie Rennie, Head of Corporate Services. I will respond to the questions related to why vacancies are not filled and also talk on the Civitas matter. Dr. Anban Pillay has already responded half of the question of why posts are not filled, especially the NHI one. Because there was earmarked funds during the year under review of about 21 million that was set aside for filling critical posts for NHI, which we could not fill, as Dr. Anban Pillay is saying. That is solely dependent on the conclusion of the bill. However, we are in the process of restructuring. So overall, as a department, why we did not fill vacant posts? It's because over a period of 2 years, as the Honorable Member asked, how long, what is the period? Over a period of 2 years, we've been restructuring. Based on the annual report of 18-19, there was a vacancy rate of 13.3%. And that is the financial year where we started the restructuring to align the current structure with the NHI bill. But because it's not concluded, the restructuring is not also concluded. So it affected 18-19 as well as 19-20, because the vacancy rate during the year 19-20 actually increased. And the reason was over and above the restructuring is what Dr. Andrews and the CFO have already indicated, that the posts that were funded, which we could have filled during the year, were affected by the continuous withdrawal of services of the critical staff, especially at HR, that were supposed to process those posts. Posts were advertised. We collected applications. Unfortunately, the process of recruitment, the following processes, including shortlisting, interviews, and all that, could unfortunately not be concluded. That is in addition to about 57 posts been vacated, either through terminations or retirements. The last point in terms of filling of vacant posts is related to the fact that due to budget cuts, there was also a reprioritization that had to be done during the financial year. So the initial plan of filling posts at the beginning of the financial year in April had to be changed due to the factors that I've already indicated. The honorable members asked how many posts are we talking about? I've already indicated that we had 57 terminations, whether retirements or resignations that we could not replace. However, critically so, there were 25 SMS posts that we had planned to fill during the year under review, which was about 18% of the vacancy rate in the department, which we could not fill. Some of them were already, advertisers have said, and we had to put them on hold. So in a nutshell, that is the challenge that we had. And the most affected ones were HRH, which is the area of the HR strategy that Dr. Andrews has already presented. There are huge vacancies in that cluster. Also, environmental health, there are vacancies there. The admin side of vacancies, we were not worried about as a department because we are in a restructuring mode. And we are also moving into a new building. So admin clerks and security people and cleaners, we will only correctly know the shortfalls and the gaps when we get to the new building, because it might present a different need for those admin posts. And then the other area that was largely affected is the finance area. We could not fill some of the critical posts and they were struggling. Over and above that, there were other technical and medical posts that we could not fill. So that is the issue related to vacancies. Maybe in conclusion of the vacancy issue, I should inform the honorable members that we are now at the stage of concluding the restructuring, including incorporating the NHI in restructuring in the branch. And within, by the end of this month, we would have started the process of engaging the MPSA, as Dr. Pillay had said already. And then we are hoping that through our engagement with the DPSA and the Minister of Public Service and Administration, by the end of November, or at least before the end of this calendar year, our proposed structure would have been concluded and signed off. Thank you. I will stop there on the vacancies. My last response is related to the Civitas building. I'm hoping that CFO will assist with the question related to how many buildings are we paying for that we're not occupying. I'm not aware of that. Probably a CFO can assist with that. With regard to the challenges related to Civitas, honorable members would might be aware through media reports that we've been through this journey for too long between ourselves and Public Works, until we gave up on them trying to assist us in the Civitas building. The maintenance program is not coming to any conclusion. They keep on postponing the dates of conclusion of completion of the upgrades and the maintenance. So that is why there was a decision in 2018 that we should get out of Civitas once and for all, get another building, hoping that if the economy improves in the next 7 or 10 years, we might get funding from Treasury to build a building that is earmarked for the Department of Health from the onset, to build from a greenfield. But for now, we're working on leasing from Public Works. They have identified the building for us, and we are in the process of planning for the relocation. The official date for us to occupy the building, according to the lease that is signed, says 1 March 2021. However, the landlord needs 3 months of tenants installation. That is the period when the building will be ready for occupation. We are hoping that as soon as that is concluded, we can start a phased-in approach of moving in and not wait for the 1st of March. That's where we are with regard to Civitas. However, it's been for more than 2 years that we've been in this impasse, hence the unfortunate underperformance that my colleagues have already alluded to. I hope I have. Honorable member also asked, the Civitas building was declared unsafe. Unfortunately, we don't have anything in writing that says that the building was declared unsafe per se. Safe to say that on the 7th of September, there was a big incident where there was a flooding from the reservoir, which is on the top of the building. By the way, we're talking about the South Tower, which has 29 floors. So the, on the 30th floor, there's a water reservoir, which assists the building with a water cooling, and it works with the chillers and the air conditioners. So there was flooding from that side, and the flooding affected the lifts, all the 6 lifts that are in the South Tower. And because of the safety concerns, all staff was vacated from the building. So since then, the building was not easily accessible, but the contractors and everybody were in the building working on the challenges. So then they corrected everything, repaired everything by the end of September. Sorry. Yes, by end of the, I think the 27th of September, they concluded their work and they declared the lift safe. The lift, the ceilings, the carpet, whatever was damaged, that project was concluded and declared safe. What we are currently under, the challenges that we're going through now are the historic challenges of HVAC, the air conditioners, the sprinklers and all that, that Public Works is failing dismally to assist us with. That is why there are challenges even now of accessibility to the building. But as I've said, we now are moving to the next building and we hope that this nightmare will be over in the coming year, 2021. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Over.
Yeah, I think I'm next, I'm not sure, but I'll go.
Yes, please, Ian.
Thank you. Chair, the first issue is the under expenditure, and I think the member is correct that we've continuously kind of improved on expenditure rate. I think last year was 98%, the year before 97%, this year 99%. I wouldn't want to say that all our problems have been solved. It's just that we do have a very rigorous reprioritization process that we do almost on a quarterly basis, and we're able to reprioritize funding. We have also quite a strong CFO forum where we do evaluate the expenditure on conditional grants, and if there's a need to reprioritize within conditional grants, even then we're able to do it. But I wouldn't, you know, want to say that all our problems are resolved. It's just that we're continuously reviewing our expenditure rates. The issue of the program one under expenditure, I think you've realized that we do have a significant challenge with the Department of Public Works. And at the end of the financial year, we sort of did not pay the fourth quarter lease because of the issues we had with the building. There was a dispute where they did not pay their own implementing agent through the DBSA, and there was a notion that we have to pay, you know, for them, which we couldn't do because there was no contractual agreement with whoever they contracted with as a supplier. But effectively, that was the reason why we didn't why we underspend on goods and services so much on program one. Currently, we have cleaned up all the leases applicable to National Department of Health. We did pick up some leases that we were paying for NHLS in the previous financial year, which we corrected. Public Works, because they do not have a proper immovable asset register, they negotiated something with Treasury where departments pay a negotiated amount. We have actually gone back and refuted that, and we're not honoring that agreement. because essentially that would lead to us condoning some irregular expenditure for services or for buildings that's not ours. So I'm quite comfortable that we have cleaned up significantly the number of leases, and what we're paying is what belongs to National Department of Health. We've cleaned up even the Port Health facilities that we were sharing with Home Affairs and police and so on. So I think we're fairly comfortable with that at the moment. And the issue of medical equipment, rightly so, it's always been an issue. Even when we deal with our what we call non-negotiables, that's always an item that we have issues in terms of expenditure. Unfortunately, we need to wait for projects to be completed before we finalize the equipment purchases. We wouldn't want to get into a position where we buy equipment that can't be commissioned because of the building not being at the practical completion stage. But I do agree that this is quite a bit of a challenge that still needs to be addressed going forward. On the issue of the budget cuts and we have put together which I think is a strong team consisting of a number of CFOs, members from National Treasury. We have also included the available economists that we have in the provinces, about three of them. And we have put up a discussion paper to the National Treasury on these cuts. So what I'm going to say now is purely from a CFO perspective, and probably not a policy decision at the moment, but if you want to see where the cuts will come from, obviously it will have to come from your direct conditional grants to a large extent, which means that grants like the HIV grant would need to be reconfigured or re-looked at in terms of what the 16 business plan items are and which ones has sort of gone past their date of efficiency. The other one would be the indirect conditional grants. And already we have put in place some mechanisms to control the potential over expenditures that could be there on the infrastructure. It's taken us quite long to get momentum built on this infrastructure grant, but unfortunately with this position now, we're going to have to find a way of curbing the expenditure and maybe also relooking our business plans. The third one is the compensation of employees. Treasury has, for the last two financial years or so, come up with the issue of compensation ceilings, where they in the allocation letter tell you exactly what that ceiling has got to be for compensation, and we have to fit into that. On a national basis, for instance, that means that we in year we probably lose 54 million on compensation, and then out the year about 68 million in the first year. Going onwards. The second thing is that obviously cuts would have to be done to your entities. We do have entities that receive grants from us, the Research Council, the Council of Medical Schemes, NHLS in particular. And then the other area that was fairly protected at the moment, but is going to feel some of these cuts will definitely be the NGOs and NPOs that we support, and we would have to relook their business plans. But in general, when we analyze the impacts of these cuts, we realize that it means lesser clinics, closing down of clinics. If it comes to that, it might mean obviously a reduction of staffing. So the entire service platform would have to be renewed given this scenario. But as I say, we're still negotiating quite a bit of this with the National Treasury. Nothing has been set yet, and we're still engaging them considerably. There was one question on the chat, which I'll answer, is that when we did this projection, and again, I'm careful to choose words to say that it's a projection at the moment. It's not a clear cut. Potentially, it could mean a cut of about 107 billion over the MTF period, but we'll have to see when Minister of Finance eventually talks, gives the allocations, what those allocations would be. So that would be the issue on the budget cuts. The payment within 30 days, yes, absolutely, it's an issue for us as well.
nationally. Our payment of 30 days is not too bad given the Civitas issues that we've had, although we do have a spike in the number of invoices that were not paid, and we're tracking that on a monthly basis, reporting to FOSAD and to National Treasury on that. I can probably go back and just see what the impact is at provincial level. I wouldn't have that offhand. The issue is that in an issue of the overspent and underspent in certain areas, the only overspent grant we have was on the human resource capitation grant, and Western Cape in particular had an overspend there. Unfortunately, the way the PFMA and DORA is written is that we can only show expenditure against the grant up to the budgeted amount. So anything beyond the budgeted amount would have to be made good from the provincial's equitable shares. But having said that, as that we do make sure that there's no unauthorized expenditure within our votes. In other words, we do our alignments in time, either through adjustment or after adjustment in terms of the PFMA and 8%. And in that way, we're trying to avoid any unauthorized expenditure on main division of votes. I'll have to take some homework in terms of the amount spent on imported goods versus local goods. I don't have that information on hand, so I'll have to go back and source that information. The matter, and I thought we'll also address it through Gail, is that remember most of our expenditure goes towards transfer of conditional grants and NGOs, and I would probably argue that some of that is why our expenditure in relation to the performance indicators, 99% versus 45%, that's generally why our expenditure could be higher. Probably a better analysis would be to look at our voted funds also against performance agreements or performance percentages, and I'm sure that analysis we can look at. The question about the redirection towards COVID, yes, I can tell you that although it wasn't new money, there was about 604 million that was redirected within the HIV grant to a COVID component. And we agreed with Treasury that the COVID component would remain within the bigger HIV grant, but that it would be earmarked for COVID. And that was about 604 million. We also had close to 400 million that was reprioritized from infrastructure. And again, it stayed within the infrastructure grant, but it was earmarked for the fund of COVID. And that was about 400 million. And then from our own voted funds, we reprioritized roughly 100 million towards that. So effectively, that 1 billion wasn't new funds that flowed into the department, but was reprioritization within. The new funds that came was directed towards the Cuban Brigade and also towards the testing testing of NHLS, the testing services, and also towards PPE. So, and again, that new funds were made part of the COVID fund under the HIV grant, which is something we push for so that we do have some flexibility within that grant over the period and towards the end of the financial year if there's movements within the need for the for COVID. Let me quickly see what else was there. Chair, I'll have to take homework again on the matter that you raised in terms of the non-communicable diseases prevention. And probably for me, just to get the brief nicely, I'll have an offline discussion with you. But I do think it's something we can work with. And as I said, we've developed, I think, a strong team now with our provincial counterparts, with some of our in-house economists and program managers to look at that scenario that you've painted. Unless I've missed anything substantially, Chair, I think those were the ones
directed to me. Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you very much to the department. We have just been over 3 hours that we have been together. And I think the presentation was extremely fruitful. And Honorable Kela and Munyai even suggested that with the challenges that we face, we still we accept and get the report as a part of our accepted program. We will look into that as we also are going to be going through the budget review process in the next few weeks. But we are grateful to you for being very honest and candid. As we are actually reflecting, there are certain underperformance areas where you were not held back by COVID. It is just within your own processes that you did not achieve some of the targets that you put. Note that these targets were shared with us by yourself voluntarily. We did not force you to put these targets. Nevertheless, we are aware some of them why you could not meet, but we are also not happy that you did not meet some of them that were just easy to get. And the point was started by Honorable Kwakhube and was echoed by some of us. But look, overall, you are doing well, continue doing well, continue pulling up your socks on areas where there are challenges, and that can also be resolved. Whenever we could assist you, let us be part of, because we don't only come in to give you bashings, but also to encourage you where you are doing well and motivate you to do better where you can. And we normally do not take a second round of points, but if members were to ask to send those follow up, we would gladly do that. Some of them would find that will come in as parliamentary questions to the department that the minister must amplify, and some we can always ask again when we meet you again. Honorable members, thank you very much for your participation. Thanks to the department for their participation and their support. Thanks to our staff in Parliament and to the media personnel that logged in. We hope that you'll be able to report both the good and the bad. Overall, it's a good working department that we are actually doing an oversight on. Good evening and thank you very much.
Long live the chair.
Thanks, my sister.
Long live. Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Moro, Dr. Makanya.